Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Boom Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zachie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 151, brought to you by Mr. Boy Productions. My name is Zachie Hassan, and I'm here with Brian Hall.
Hey, what's up, Zachie?
Hey, man, it's been a while.
I know. I feel like we say that a lot.
We do. We don't talk to each other enough. That's the lesson in all this.
That is real. And as I was looking at the movies I wanted to talk about at the beginning, I felt like I had quite a few, and that's when it occurred to me, man, it'd been a while.
I have to say, and this is like peek behind the curtain, I think it's fair to say that you and I, probably certainly via text, we talk probably more than we talk to most people in our lives.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of text going on. I love it, though. All the funny meme stuff.
I'm like meme master.
Yeah.
But even still, I mean, there's something to just sitting in front of a microphone and just chatting.
I know. It's like we're getting on the phone. You know, like people used to go for, like, say, a Sunday drive. You know, you can picture, like, Lucy and Ricky, you know, and Fred and Ethel. This is what I feel like with this. It's like, yeah, it's whatever night tonight is, Tuesday night, get on the horn and just chit-chat with my bud.
There we go. And yeah. you've been like a one-man movie pass machine.
I'd like to take a moment to speak about movie pass with everyone. Now a word from our sponsor. Look, we all know what MoviePass is. If you don't know what MoviePass is, actually, it's a subscription service where you pay $9.95 a month, and you are able to see one movie a day, right? So you can see pretty much anything. The only restrictions are if the theater doesn't accept it, and there's only one theater around me that doesn't take it, and it's been pretty easy to find other ones that do. So I got it because it seems unsustainable to pay so little and to literally be able to watch 31 movies a month if you want. And so with that in mind, I thought, well, I may as well get this and, you know, until it goes out of business, because why not? I mean,
let the good times roll.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say, look, I realize this could be used as like a, oh, how foolish we were. Someone using this audio clip of me praising it now, because when they become like Skynet or something in the future, like I completely am aware that could happen. So I'm just getting that out of the way right now. That's my asterisk right now. That said, as of today, this thing, I don't know why you wouldn't get MoviePass.
And yeah,
again, $9.95 a month. I have seen 5 movies with this thing already. And which means roughly, rough math, I've saved, including the subscription price, I've saved about $65 this month.
And the beauty of it, Brian, is you're basically in the black for the next like 5 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because the first movie I saw with it was Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers documentary, which I'll talk about in a second. But let's say the ticket for that was like $13 or something like that. I'm already saving like $4, right? Or $3 or whatever it is. So just seeing one movie, you're already saving money. And then after that, I saw Ocean's 8, which honestly, I probably wouldn't have watched till HBO, but I had an afternoon and a movie pass. Why not? And if I'm going to watch it, with any movie, I'm one of those people. I know some people prefer things in their living room, but if I can, I'd love to see everything in the theater. Going along with that, it was almost July 4th. And I thought, you know, I wonder if Jaws is playing on the big screen anywhere. And sure enough, it was. And they took MoviePass. So I went and saw Jaws with my MoviePass with my brother, which was phenomenal seeing that on a big screen. And then before Won't You Be My Neighbor, there was a trailer for a documentary called Three Identical Strangers. Have you heard of this?
I haven't.
I don't know if I would have heard of it otherwise, but I went to this art house theater and they were playing it. And I was like, well, I'll be.
Cha-ching, MoviePass.
Yeah, exactly. So I went and saw that. This is hilarious. I'll talk about that in a second. And then lastly, I used it on Ant-Man, which we're going to be talking about this episode. So
see, what's funny is you were texting. You were texting like, I saw this on MoviePass. And I sent you a GIF of the scene from Zoolander where the guys are like with the gasoline, like spraying it everywhere.
I was like, that is probably the most apt metaphor, because they're celebrating while they're dousing themselves with things that will probably bring about their demise. So so perfect. So I get the two I'll talk about real fast was Won't You Be My Neighbor, which have you seen?
I need to, man.
It's very good. I mean, obviously we grew up watching Mr. Rogers, and I don't know why, but for some reason I always thought he was sort of our generation's guy, but I forgot him. He's been around for a very long time.
That's right.
It's a really nice documentary. Like, I don't think it goes into as many details as I would have enjoyed. I think I would have liked to have learned a little bit more about, you know, his youth and things like that. And they go into it, but it goes pretty quickly over everything. The one spoiler I will give that I think everyone wants to know is that, yes, he was the real deal. So, right. Like, people are all like, no, yeah, what you see is what you get. And that was so basically spending 90 minutes with this guy and having it confirmed that he was as nice as you would hope and like the model human being, you know, that was true. That's a nice 90 minutes to sit and enjoy and, you know, celebrate the guy. So I definitely recommend it. It's a nice time. And then I'll talk. Well, Ocean's 8. Did we talk about that? I forgot. I think you saw,
I talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's whatever. It's fine.
I mean, it's not bad, but it is what it is, I think, is.
You know what it is? It's Ocean's 5 or 4, I mean. You know what I mean? So it's not reinventing the wheel. It's different people playing analogs to the characters that were already there. And the heist is fairly interesting, but the execution I didn't find as interesting as the previous films.
Yes.
So it's not without its moments.
Did you, let me ask you something. Did you, okay, I'm trying to say that I don't want to spoil anything.
Sure.
Did you expect somebody to show up before it all ended? Like, I, you know, fully expected there to be a twist at the end.
Sure.
Where it'd be like, hey, how's it going? Kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I guess I thought the same thing. Okay. I was anticipating that. I thought there was going to be, that was going to be the tease or something. But.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it was just kind of a bummer. Because, I mean, like I said, like everybody, I liked everybody. Like Helena Bonham Carter, I saw in some reviews getting, they're like, meh. I was like, I thought she was kind of good. Like, and I don't know. I didn't think they were given enough interesting things to do.
I thought that Sandra Bullock was kind of dull.
Yeah. I mean, she's kind of channeling George Clooney's thing.
Yes.
But she doesn't have a ton to do.
Yes.
You know?
I thought Cate Blanchett was awesome. As I've mentioned before, though, I have a massive crush on Cate Blanchett, so that might be coloring my reaction to that somewhat.
And she's kind of channeling Brad Pitt.
But she did a good job with that, I think.
She did. She was convincing. But I thought the total star of the movie is Anne Hathaway.
I totally 100% agree. Yeah.
Yeah, she was really
good. Agree. Like, I thought it was very clever. The stuff they did with her character was clever.
Yeah, I agree. And most of the laughs from the movie, for me, came from her.
Yes. And by the way, I really liked Richard Armitage in this.
Who's he? Sorry.
Clearly made a mark. Brian did his studying before we got on. Richard Armitage is the guy, the ex-boyfriend, Sandra Bullock's ex-boyfriend.
Oh, I don't know his name.
You know who he is? He's have you seen the Hobbit movies?
Mm-hmm. I didn't finish them.
Well, he's like the main dwarf, like the.
Oh, I would have never put that together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, yeah, he was good. I think, and I just rewatched Ocean's 11.
Okay.
And that heist is just so well executed and surprising, and the twists and the turns and the, when it's over and they're standing by the Bellagio fountain, you're just like, you are totally in it with them.
You are sitting there with them.
Yes. And that sense of relief and joy and.
Well, and not just that, Brian. I mean, I think that the original film really did a good job of making every character unique and essential.
Essential. Exactly. Yes.
And I feel like in this one, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, all right, we got eight. We got to fill in the, you know, it's like we got to find eight slots to fill, you know?
Yeah, and it was funny. There was one moment, and this isn't half a spoiler, but there's a moment where there's a hiccup, and Rihanna's like, oh, my sister can fix that. And her sister's like, fix. And she's like, thanks, sis. And then she leaves, and I was like, you can't do that. Like, that's either funny. Make her a part of the team or make it more complicated.
That's really funny.
But yeah, I just wish that the heist had... Because at one point, I think like three of them at the same time are like cooks or waiters. And I was like, no, yeah. spread them out. Yeah. So, I mean, it's totally passable, like TV watch. But yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer. But hey, with MoviePass, I had no regrets. So I really actually did not plan on talking about that movie at all. The other one I want to touch on really briefly is the documentary Three Identical Strangers. Mm-hmm. So I'll just give the tease that's in the trailer and I won't go much further. But basically what happens, this is a true story documentary. And it starts off with this guy, and a lot of these moments are recreated with actors. But this guy goes to college for the first year, right? He's like 18 years old. And everyone on campus is like, hey, man, hey, hey. People are giving him hugs. And he's like confused because he's never been there before. And so then this one guy comes up to him and he goes, you look just like this guy from last year who said he wasn't coming back. He was my best friend. So I don't know, man. I think you might be his twin. So they call this guy up, drive whatever, 100 miles to go meet this guy. And sure enough, it's like looking in a mirror, like they're twins. Huh. And they've been separated. Never knew the other one existed. So a newspaper picks up on this story, runs an article, and then somewhere else in the country, a guy sees the picture of them and goes, holy crap, those two guys look like me. And it's, wow. It turns out there's a triplet. And so basically these triplets were separated at birth. And why? And what does it all mean? And what did it mean for them? And that's basically what this documentary is. And there's some sinister... things behind the curtain going on. And
get out of here. That's like the type of story that if you saw it on a Lifetime movie, you'd be like, mm-hmm. What the hell is this?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, I thought it did a pretty good job of every time something happened, I'd be like, wait a minute. And then it's like the movie, it happened like four times. It knew I was thinking that. And it was like, well, okay. I know what you're thinking. You know, basically sort of a thing. I was like, wow, it was pretty well constructed. I mean, the way they doled out this story over 90 minutes. It was,
how interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, can't you just see the Lifetime, like Antonio Sabato Jr. as triplet, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
This is not that, though. No Antonio Sabato Jr.
No, regrettably. but yeah, yeah. So anyway, those... And then, of course, getting to Ant-Man. We'll be talking about that soon. So
we will get there. There we go. So this segment brought to you by MoviePass.
Yeah. Which is funny because then we don't know what ads are going to be playing during our show. And it'll probably be the AMC Stubbs program or something.
That's funny. All right. Well, moving on from that, I should mention very briefly that I bought the movie Street Fighter.
Did you really?
Well, yes, because A, my kids have been begging me to buy Street Fighter, and B,
are you serious?
They have, because they play the video games. So they're like, can you buy Street Fighter? And so I bought it for them, because B, I secretly hate them. And so it was like $5 with some voodoo credit, and so they're like, can we watch Street Fighter? I'm like, okay, just give me... Like, we haven't watched it yet, because I'm like, I need to like... build up the moral fortitude to watch it.
You know what's funny, though? Your children truly are you from 1995. Isn't it funny? Buy Street Fighter, Dad, please.
It's so funny. Yeah, they play the video. And I literally gave it some thought. I'm like, you know, if there is going to be a time in their life where they appreciate that movie, it is like right now.
Sure.
So that's why I was like, you know, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know. So we'll get there. So this is like a to be continued, because it has been purchased. The bullet is in the chamber. I'll let you know what happens after it's fired. You know,
I've never seen it. I'll be really curious what you think revisiting it and what your kids think of it now.
I mean, I thought it was garbage back in 94. So,
yeah. Oh, 94. Wow. 94. So, but I was going to say with the visual effects, because your kids obviously are versed in, you know, like Jurassic World and all those sorts of things. I wonder if that stuff with that, how that plays for them.
But yeah, I mean, they're pretty like, I mean, you know, they love stuff like the Goonies too, and Gremlins and all that. So, you know, I mean, I would imagine that if you're like an 11-year-old and you've played the video game, this will basically scratch that itch. It's just very funny to me that, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert on the video game, but I was like, was there any illusion that Guile is the main character in Street Fighter? You know, I mean, did you played the game right back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I mean, even, I was not a fanatic of that game, but I was like, well, clearly it's like Ryu and Ken. They're like the main characters.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love the thinking of like, well, it's like they offered it to Van Damme, and it's like, well, I guess he fits this guy.
Right, right. See, yeah. I didn't even know what character he played. I don't know this movie at all.
Yeah, it's, I mean, for those, I mean, I'm assuming if you are listening to this show, you have some familiarity with Street Fighter. You know, Van Damme is Guile, and Raul Julia, unfortunately, in his last performance,
is
M. Bison. And then I mean, it's just, it's this weird, bizarre cornucopia of all these, Ming-Na is Chun-Li, and what's her name, that Australian singer, Kylie Minogue is Cammy.
What?
Yeah.
Kylie Minogue is in that movie?
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that. I know. What's the other one? The Chris Pine? No, not Chris Pine. Chris Klein.
Chris Klein, yeah. The Legend of Chun-Li. Right?
Yeah.
That was like the Chris Nolan version of Street Fighter.
What?
Like, you know, I mean, that's literally what... It's like, let's take Street Fighter and just strip it down and make it...
Oh.
As absolutely grounded as possible so that we can make it even more apparent how stupid this whole endeavor is, you know?
That is funny, yeah.
It's funny, I say that like the Super Mario Brothers movie, that's the Chris Nolan Mario Brothers movie.
I've never watched that, and I have to admit there's a small percentage of me that is sort of taken with the visuals that I've seen from trailers.
I've talked about this before. The Super Mario Brothers movie is absolutely worth watching because... It's like you would never see a movie like that today. It just could not exist, you know?
Right, right,
and,
right.
And I think that in and of itself makes it fascinating. It is not good, but it is fascinating. You know? We talked about it before how, like, Bob Hoskins, you know, RIP, he gave an interview where it's like, if there was one movie you could, go back and not do again, what would it be? Oh, Super Mario Brothers. Like, what's the biggest mistake you've ever made in your life? Oh, Super Mario Brothers. Like,
yeah.
You know? So it is fascinating. I'm going to say that.
Okay.
You know?
Cool.
But I don't know how we went down this road about video game movies. I'm sharing these with the kids because I'm expecting we'll watch Mortal Kombat too, you know.
Man, I never saw those either. I don't know how I missed these.
Well, this compared to Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat is like the Magnificent Ambersons, you know. It's you know.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie, but it's all relative.
Yeah.
But I will keep you posted on how that goes. Moving on, Brian, we do have some listener letters.
All right.
So here's one from Brent Clark, who asks our thoughts on the Disney/Fox/Comcast deal, which appears to be in the offing. I think what I read is that all the regulatory hurdles have been cleared for Disney to acquire Fox's assets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's like a three-way struggle between Disney and Comcast for who gets to own Fox.
Right.
And what I also read just today is that apparently some shareholders are now suing to stop Disney from buying Comcast. Buying Fox.
Yeah.
This is fascinating to me because we have talked about this merger to some extent, but it's weird how online you have people sort of like choosing up sides.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm kind of like, you know, we're like picking sides over which massive multimedia conglomerate will own our time.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand what the implications are just yet.
Yeah.
So for me, I like things the way they are. I mean, this doesn't necessarily excite me. Like, part of it makes me sad because I feel like within reason, all the studios seem to have a bit of a personality, and I sort of mourn the loss of a personality making our, you know, the things that we enjoy.
That's really true.
But, we'll see.
I mean, in a very narrow sense, you've got people who are like, oh, well, you know, Disney's going to get, you know, the Marvel stuff back.
Sure. Right. Like, and X-Men can be in the Marvel.
X-Men universe. And Fantastic Four and whatever else. And you know, okay, that's a narrow prism by which, I mean, certainly as a Marvel fan, I wouldn't be opposed to that, obviously, right?
Oh, totally.
But I don't know. There's something about Disney owning The Simpsons that I find slightly off-putting. I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know,
weird.
What I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just feels weird to me.
Yeah, just I don't know.
When it, Disney owning Predator, you know?
Right. Like, I was gonna say we've gotten a tease of that, I suppose, where Disney, when they acquired Star Wars, it was like, well, what's that going to be like? And it's like, well, it's still Star Wars, and then they're going to own all the Marvel stuff, and it's like, well, it's still Marvel, you know? Like, I don't know how that works and why those things get to do those things. I mean, obviously because they're the biggest things in the universe right now, but I don't know. I don't know what I mean. Are they going to make more Predator movies? Is Fox even going to be a title anymore? Is it just going to be Disney Presents Predator? I have no idea.
Disney's Predator. Doesn't that sound weird?
It does.
It's definitely, I mean, I've said before only half jokingly that one day Disney's just going to own all of us.
Yeah.
We'll all have like a TM and C stamped on our ass.
Yeah, in the shape of a mouse.
We'll all be huddled around fires in the nuclear winter. It's like, how did Disney own us? And then they'll be like, it all started with MoviePass. You know?
And everyone will just throw their can of beans at me.
And you're like, I just didn't want to spend money to see that documentary, okay? You
know? Yeah. I would have seen Ocean's 8 otherwise.
So I mean, I'm very curious. I mean, like I said, it seems like it's full steam ahead on this deal. So I don't know.
Yeah. But again, okay, so this reminds me something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, right? Where that was a Disney movie. But at the time, it came out under Touchstone Pictures because it's, like, edgy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, is Disney going to put out, say, like, a Deadpool or whatever? I mean, is that – what's – are they going to have different banners? And why not just have that banner be Fox? You know?
Maybe it will be.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't it be so sad to lose that fanfare in the opening? You know,
but I mean, but would they?
I don't know. That's it. I don't know what this means.
It's just – it's weird how – so much of everything we're talking about right now is driven purely by, like, nostalgia.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like it's funny because you know, we on this show, we talked about, like, oh, you know, Toys R Us is closed now, and it's kind of sad and stuff. And I saw a meme on Facebook or Twitter, one of these things, where it's like, today's kids will never understand this. And it showed, like, Blockbuster Video and Toys R Us and like, other like two other things, defunct things, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that and I was like, big picture, so what?
Yeah, sure.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I mean, I get it, right? Obviously, because it's a collective part of certainly like your childhood, my childhood, going to Toys R Us and all that. And it's like, you know, I mean, I think about it and I'm like, well, they'll have other stuff that they... You know, it's weird how we're like, oh, kids will never understand going to Blockbuster on Friday night. And it's like, yeah, because they can go to friggin' YouTube on their, or like Netflix on their TV and watch shit. Like, it's, you know, like.
Yeah.
Like, time moves in a linear fashion. We're past that now.
Yeah, I mean, I get it because I feel that personally. But, like, I don't mind that. I'm glad I had that experience, and it means
that's
something
what
to
I'm
me
saying.
Because I was there. But, like, yeah, I mean, I, you know, your kid doesn't care that he can't get Smurfs 2 on a Friday night.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, oh, kids today will never know what it's like not to have, you know, blueberry cereal or some shit. You know, like,
sorry, I was taking a sip.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, okay. Cereal. Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? Remember that?
No, yeah.
Fruity, yummy, mummy, or all that. Whatever.
No, I totally know. Yeah, berry. Yeah,
okay.
Frankenberry.
Big deal. Frankenberry.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just, you may be better off.
That's what I'm about to say. Okay, so they're spared early onset diabetes. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Right.
You know? But that's, yeah. I mean, we're in the midst of these the age of media conglomeration, you know?
Yeah.
We shall see what it means. Here's another question. This is from Jeff Jordan, who I got to thank Jeff for. He always sends these great, very in-depth questions, which I love sort of digging into. This one was kind of funny to me anyway. He says, what qualifications are taken into consideration when deciding to do a commentary track? And I feel like this is in direct response to our Superman 3 commentary, because I think that when I asked Brian to do this, his exact thought was, what qualifications are taken into consideration when deciding to do a commentary, Zach?
Yeah.
I said, you know, it's funny because I posted the Superman 3 track on Facebook, and people are like, Huh? And I'm like, Brian is a good friend. I think I owe Brian like an oil change for having subjected him to that. Not once, but twice in a 24-hour period, which is...
Yeah, well, I had to see it because I'd never seen it before. So I watched it on Saturday and I rewatched it Sunday morning.
You're welcome.
it was kind of fun to see it. I mean, I feel like that with Rocky. I shouldn't admit this out loud. I've never seen Rocky 3.
Ugh, Brian.
And so, I mean, if, you know, something were to come up and it was forced me to watch it, I'm like, oh, well, good. Now I'm filling that gap.
Ah, there we go. Yeah. Well, Jeff asks, he says, you kicked things off with the first Planet of the Apes at around the time that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was released. And most recently, you did Jurassic Park to coincide with the release of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. But Superman 3 came totally out of the blue. The film was an absolute turd, and there's no current DC film being released in the theaters. That is all true, Jeff.
I appreciate him being like, now wait a minute. And like, I'm not just gonna just wonder this. I'm gonna call him out. I appreciate now, that diligence.
I said on the track I did it purely because the anniversary was like sitting there, and I was like, you know what, this could be fun. And I haven't listened to the track, but I seem to remember it being fun, so I feel like, you know, worked out okay. I don't know. I haven't, you know, you listening, if you listen to that Superman track and you're like, Zach, you don't ever do that again, then I will sit here corrected. But I think that was borne out. He adds, equally puzzling, you covered Back to the Future Part 2 and Terminator 2, Judgment Day, as your first commentary entries for those franchises. What gives? and the answer to that, T2, as we've said, is one of Brian's all-time favorite movies.
Yes.
So that was our second commentary, as I recall.
Wow.
And so I think it was one of those things where I was like, hey, we did Planet of the Apes for me. What would you want to do? And Brian was like, T2. And I was like, sounds good. And mm-hmm, so we did that. And then for Back to the Future 2, we dropped that the day of the date of Back to the
yes,
Future
2. Yes, that's right.
And so that was the rationale there. So now with Terminator 2, that was just I think T2, unlike many other sequels, it really does stand apart.
Yes.
In many ways. That being said, next year is the 45th anniversary of the first Terminator.
Is that right? Well, wait, that came out in 84, right?
84, so that would be... That would be the 35th anniversary.
Yeah.
35th, sorry. Don't age it prematurely. So we will probably talk through the first Terminator next year, I would expect.
Yeah, that tends to be what happens. There's some sort of, you know, thing that it lines up with, whether it's an anniversary or Back to the Future, that was pretty unique. But the date that movie took place.
Yeah. So
it tends to be a reason.
Yeah. So usually, I mean, peek inside the curtain here. The way we usually do this is at the beginning of the calendar year, I'll sort of take a general glance at, like, what are big movies celebrating anniversaries this year? And I'll just kind of jot down on my own, like, what would make for an interesting commentary. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go to Brian and be like, hey, how about this? How about this? And, you know, some Brian is amenable to, some he's less amenable to. And so I'll usually just kind of, I'll just ignore those, you know?
Yeah.
And usually it's just like, what could we have a fun conversation about?
Yeah.
That's essentially what it comes down to, you know? Yeah. And he says, do you have plans for other Dark Horse entries in the future? I personally would love to see you and Brian do entertaining commentaries on RoboCop 3, Mac and Me, and Halloween Resurrection because of how batshit crazy those films were. And I would say we probably, I mean, not any of those three necessarily, but, you know, I'm always, you know, that's what led to me doing Superman 3. Hell, and we did Superman 4 last year. We did Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah. Which is the moment I realized I think I might kind of enjoy Batman and Robin. So that was illuminating.
That was, yeah. And I had a lot of fun watching that with you. So that was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, we're, you know, it's generally speaking, we do take lots of suggestions because we will, Brian, be doing Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves later this year.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
That's going to happen. We're going to tie that in with the new crappy looking Robin Hood movie with Taron Egerton.
Yeah.
Which my prediction, it will make Robin Hood Prince of Thieves look like the Magnificent Ambersons. I'm just going to use that as my go-to comparison.
This is like your Rory Calhoun.
Yeah. But we'll see. I mean, I might have egg on my face about that. Jeff also asks, you could also go with other films like Dark City, Election, or The People versus Larry Flint, well-crafted, praiseworthy films that only enjoyed a limited outreach of appeal among moviegoers. That's actually a really good idea.
I was waiting for the beat, and I was going to go, nah.
You know, I will say, Dark City, right? Which I love. I think it's a great film. I would say, I don't know what I could add to that. That hasn't already been covered on a terrific commentary track by Roger Ebert on that movie.
Hey, I am aware of that track. I've never listened to it. I should do that.
Yeah, that movie, as I recall, in 98, Roger Ebert picked Dark City as his favorite movie of the year.
Wow.
And he was a real champion for that film. So his commentary track for it is terrific.
Man, I gotta look that up.
Yeah, highly, highly recommend. If you have that movie, it's worth owning the Blu-ray just for that commentary.
Hmm. I've only seen it once, so I remember moments, but not well, I guess.
I mean, there are some movies with just amazing commentary tracks where it's like, well, I don't know what I could add.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I very much want one day, Brian, to watch The Godfather with you.
Oh, that'd be great.
Even though that has one of the greatest commentary tracks of all time by Francis Ford Coppola.
You have mentioned this, and it's to my shame. I still haven't listened to these. And I remember years and years ago you saying it's like listening to film school.
Yep.
And
yeah, I said this back in 2001 when those movies came out on DVD. So 2001, I was beginning my last year of film school, and I spent a week going through those films. I had never seen The Godfather before 2001, by the way. I watched them for the first time, and then I watched them with the commentary, and I said, I was like, if these DVDs had come out like 2 years ago, I wouldn't have needed to go to film school.
Wow.
You know, and I still believe that.
Yeah. Well, I have to check them out.
Yeah. So that is Jeff's question about the commentaries. He also has one additional question that I wanted to run by you. He says, I'd like to hear your opinion on what other films from the 1980s/90s would be well suited to the same treatment as Cobra Kai on a premium cable or streaming channel. I include all the variables listed as the following. So one would be a sequel series featuring the same cast members from the film, a sequel series with recast actors playing the same roles, so like a reboot, like the Magnum PI thing that they're doing right now, or a sequel series featuring new characters only, but with direct ties to the film.
This is such a good question.
Isn't it? And
I feel like I'm not going to give it the justice it deserves, but
thanks,
I did
Brian.
Come up with some. What about you?
I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so I know I'm missing some obvious ones that are going to come to me, but just in a panic when I read that before we got on the air, these were the ones I wrote down. Sequel series featuring the same cast members from the film. I said Clerks, which I realized did become an animated series at one point. And then I actually was like scanning my DVD shelf in a panic, but Fear of a Black Hat, I brought it up before, is like
a mockumentary.
Funny. It's like a 90s rap mockumentary in the vein of Spinal Tap. And I was like, that could be really funny as some sort of like limited series or like a 10 episode thing about like these guys going from being obscure to being discovered, to making an album, to like selling out. I think that could be a lot of fun. And those guys are hilarious. So then sequel series with recasted actors playing the same roles. I realize this is going into 2000 just by a hair, but I said the Ocean series, actually.
Oh, like, how funny.
This cool gang doing a bunch of heists every week. I think that could be kind of fun.
Yeah, but how would you keep that to me is like a WPWR syndicated series.
Oh, well, that's the problem. I mean, you can picture the worst version of all these, right. Which is the total inclination, but... and then you're probably going to leave. This is a total WPWR. I said Darkman.
Oh, my gosh. That was like the movie itself was like a WPWR.
Yeah.
You remember they did those sequels to Darkman?
I've only known the first one.
Yeah, they did two sequels straight to video. And they starred Arnold Vosloo.
Damn, Nation. Is that off the top of your head?
It is, yeah. You know Arnold Vosloo?
No.
He's...
No offense.
No. He was the mummy.
Oh. He's
the mummy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and they're bad. I mean, those sequels are bad.
Yeah, I remember one of them was actually called Die, Dark Man, Die.
Yes.
So, but I don't know. Like, he was kind of cool. I like that movie I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so I don't know what I'd think, but I don't know, the shadowy cool figure that has to hide his face and helps people out. I could see that. finally, a sequel series featuring new characters only, but with direct ties to the film. Stick with me here. Pulp Fiction.
Ooh.
Right? I mean, like, Fargo? Who would have thought Fargo could have been good? And Fargo is excellent.
That's actually a great idea, Brian.
I think that could be kind of a cool series. And then you know, every now and then you reference some of these other characters, you know, like Vincent Vega and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, shoot, maybe I should quit while I'm ahead on that one. Then I was going to say Men in Black. I think you could have, like, an Alien of the Week sort of story.
Sure. Well, you could. I mean, there was a Men in Black animated series.
That's right. That's right. Much, yeah, I guess like Clerks.
And that was a good show, by the way, the Men in Black cartoon show.
I remember it. It kind of had an Aeon Flux sort of look to it, right?
It did. It was tonally very similar to the real Ghostbusters.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which is appropriate because they're both Sony, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then this one's cheating again because this is in the 2000s, but I thought Inception.
You know, oh, that's, like, interesting.
Hijackers.
Yeah, and you do different characters.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that idea, actually. Very good, so. Brian.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I to be
that's
honest,
a great question.
It is, and I'm loving the Inception idea. That's great.
I feel like we keep giving away these great ideas.
I know, that's great.
Someone, yeah, actually, as long as we put it out there, just do it. All right.
Whatever I could totally, dude. I could totally see like an Inception. I mean, this is not a great comparison, but like how, you know, there was the Stargate TV series.
Yeah.
Which took the central premise of the movie and expanded it into like, oh, we can use this portal to go to this world, and you know, and you could do something like that with Inception, where it's like every episode is or every arc is like a journey into somebody's mind stream, and you know, you could build it. You could do a lot of world building within that.
Oh, totally. Oh,
man, I love that idea.
Yeah, and then, I mean, as much as, like, I mean, I can see the opening teaser, you know, where it's like, this guy, if doesn't do this, his building's going to corrupt and, or, you know, collapse, and so we got to get this guy to, you know, fall in love with another woman. Or,
yeah.
Or, like, double, you're like, what? That doesn't make sense. And then it's
I
like,
would, to be honest, Brian, I would make the main character Cobb from the movie.
Sure, sure.
You know, you recast it, obviously, but...
Yeah.
I really like that idea. Wow, that's great.
All right. Well, remember to cut this out. No one will hear this part of the episode because we cut it out to capitalize on this.
So with that in mind, why don't we take a little break, Brian, and we'll come back right after this. And we're back, and we have some headlines to discuss. It's been a couple weeks, and Hollywood has been headlining.
So, as it tends to do.
As tends to happen, yeah. I wish they would just wait for us to record so that we could stay abreast
yes.
of what's happening. But Jurassic World is in theaters right now, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and it has made gobs of money. It has made, as of now, $1.1 billion, just about. So $336 million domestically, $727 million foreign. So a massive, massive hit for
Man,
for
that,
Universal.
That, I don't know if it's our age, but I don't sense the buzz or excitement around that movie. But I guess it must be killing with kids.
Doesn't it feel like it's a little bit like not qualitatively, but it feels like the Transformers franchise almost.
Mm, sure, yeah.
Right, where it's like you go in, you kind of know what to expect, and I think Universal is very smart. I mean, this is a family franchise, even though it's... I don't know that it was ever perceived that way, but it is that way now.
Yeah. It's take the kids.
I mean,
these dinosaurs go amok, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I took my oldest to the press screening, and then I took my two younger ones. I took them just this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife just saw it yesterday. Speaking of MoviePass, my wife uses my MoviePass more than I do.
Hey, man. Let the good times roll.
Gasoline. But this thing is a massive hit. So, of course, there is going to be a third one. And this is exciting to me. Jeff Goldblum says that he's hoping he gets to come back. You know, I think he's sort of leaving it up to the filmmakers. But he's excited about the possibility. And I think... Brian, Ian Malcolm is sort of my spirit animal on mm-hmm. screen, I'd like to think. He's like the movie version of me, in my head anyway.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he is optimistic about it, I like the fact that he embraces this character. I think he recognizes that out of all the decades he's been on screen, Ian Malcolm really is the closest he has to like an iconic role.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. And if he wants to come back for, come on. Like what are we waiting on?
Yeah, I think all of the original stars have been amenable to the idea of coming back. So and we talked about this last time. It's like, guys, come on. If this is indeed the closer of the trilogy, which is, you know, what I read, by the way, this is interesting, is that when Spielberg made the deal with Crichton back in the day, the deal was for 6 movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm assuming, you know, that deal can be extended or whatever. But, like, if you plan to make this 6th Jurassic movie sort of culminative, then, of course, you bring in the all-stars.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, why the hell not? Don't make the same mistake Star Wars did, where you wait too long for this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Then we won't get the reunion we all wanted.
Very true. It was very disappointing. Now, that being said, all things are not peaches and sunshine in Jurassic Kingdom, fallen or otherwise, Brian. Because it turns out, you know, we've spent several weeks now talking about how Star Wars fans are just the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it turns out there are many, many Star Wars fans, let's say.
Too many.
Too many Star Wars fans are terrible. There are many lovely Star Wars fans, I'm sure, but unfortunately, like me, I actually make up for the majority of the terrible ones, right? But Jurassic Park fans, Brian, are saying, "Hold my beer," this is true. There is a petition online now that is requesting that Colin Trevorrow, who directed Jurassic World, he wrote both Jurassic World and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and who is now coming back to direct the third Jurassic World movie, these fans do not want that to happen.
Okay.
And so they say, Brian, as longtime fans of Jurassic Park and Jurassic World, we believe that director J.A. Bayona, who directed Fallen Kingdom, took an important step in the right direction with the franchise. After Fallen Kingdom, which ended up being a darker and more mature chapter than its predecessor, there would be no point in going back to Colin Trevorrow's uninspired style.
I don't even know if I can muster up energy to respond to this, but... He wrote the damn thing that they love.
The thing is, Brian, I guess this you know, we see now how this transcends Star Wars, which we knew anyway. But yeah. Like the entitled asshole gene,
yes,
that has infected fandom. It's spread like the virus at the end of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. You know,
yeah,
it's gone from franchise to franchise.
Uh huh.
And I'm just like,
yeah.
You don't get to decide this stuff except with your wallet.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Except that they do. Like, sometimes this stuff actually shuts things down.
Sure.
That's what's scary, because then I think it just encourages people to behave like this.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's one of those things, right, where you say, like, if it seems like when you listen to the most vocal fans... You pay the price at the box. Actually, you know what? Here's the problem. That math would work were we not looking at Solo, a Star Wars story, being like a catastrophe, right? That sort of changes everything.
Right.
But like, for all the bitching people did about Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
Right.
It made gazillions.
Right.
For all the like fanboy fervor that was inspired by... I don't know, Scott Pilgrim.
Mm, right.
That movie made like $7.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, these things don't translate, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's just weird. The entitlement. Oh, we're going to start a petition just to shit all over this guy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. To be fair, I'd never heard of it. You know, so I mean, like, yeah, it's out there. I'm sure it'd probably cross my whatever internet travels eventually, but it's just a fart in the wind.
A fart in the wind is, that's actually the subtitle for Jurassic World 3. So this petition is at change.org, and I'm telling you that, folks, so that you can mock and make fun. So please don't sign it because of hearing us talk about it.
Yeah.
It's got 209 signatories though, Brian. So 209 very dedicated Jurassic Park fans. It's weird to me because I'm just like, can't you just go and like watch the movie? Like why? Like it's weird because literally, I was thinking about how before I saw this petition, I was like, I love how Jurassic Park fans are just like, give me a movie with dinosaurs eating people and I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed that was the way Jurassic Park fans approach this franchise, but I stand.
209
corrected.
Of them say no.
They say the nay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. And speaking of sequels that are coming, Brian, here's a sequel, Brian, that
yes.
I knew was coming. I had every confidence that this was coming. I knew it.
Yeah.
I had no reason to think otherwise. I'm talking about the sequel to Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never once voiced any doubt in this.
Never. Not once, not for a second. I think that was my, like, in the 3 months leading up to Infinity War, I was like, let me tell you what's actually going to happen. I was like, let me lay it out for you. They're yeah. doing a swerve. They're gonna kill off Doctor Strange just to show they can.
Mm-hmm.
And it, in my defense, they did kill off Doctor Strange.
Sure.
So I wasn't entirely wrong, but he of course turned to dust, which is movie magic death.
Mm-hmm.
So we can assume that he will be back and he'll be good to go just in time for the sequel. Kevin Feige has said that there is a sequel to Doctor Strange coming in phase, what'll it be now? Phase four,
I guess.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy. I gotta say.
Yeah, I like that character. I enjoyed the film Doctor Strange, but seeing even more of him in Avengers, I was like, yeah, I like this guy.
You know, I gotta tell you, for me, I have known of Doctor Strange all my life, obviously, because if you read Marvel comics at any point, he was present. You know, I mm-hmm. can't say I read his comic regularly, anything like that. But I would say because of the movies, I've come to love the character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's an impressive thing all by itself.
You know, he might sort of, if we don't have any more Iron Man movies, or at least with Robert Downey Jr., you know, he kind of fills that fun, rich, sarcastic guy thing.
He does. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And I just thought his role in Infinity War was just really terrific. I think I loved the progression and the growth we've seen from his solo movie to Infinity War.
Yeah.
And that's why I like the idea of, you know, because I think fundamentally the problem with Doctor Strange is he's so powerful that a lot of these like big universe altering stories involve the necessity to get him off the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we kind of saw that to some extent in Infinity War. And I like the idea of doing a movie focused on him that will challenge, you know, that overpowered nature.
Right.
And really go into sort of, you know, all the dark realms and everything else that Steve Ditko, who just passed away, by the way, Steve Ditko 2 days ago, that if you ever read those old comics from the 60s drawn by him, I mean, he created this vision of just these otherworldly dimensions and whatnot that we see brought to bear to some extent at the tail end of the Doctor Strange movie, but I would love to just go whole hog into that stuff. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, you know, when is it slated for?
They haven't said.
Okay, they just that said. It will happen.
It is going to happen. Yeah. So
why do you think they would do that if he is in a cliffhanger, not around?
I mean, I think Kevin Feige is not stupid, right? So I mean, it's like, you know, I don't think it's a spoiler to say Doctor Strange will make it out of that. I think the question is, how will he come back?
Right. Yeah. I'm just right. curious.
Yeah, I mean, they've announced Spider-Man 2, right?
Right.
Far From Home, it's going to be called. and obviously they already have said the Black Panther sequel is coming. So I think with that stuff already being out there, it's like, well, you know, come on, we're not fooling anybody.
Right.
You know, it this is not a good comparison, but it reminds me of how, like, Francis Coppola wanted the original title of Godfather 3 to be The Death of Michael Corleone.
Mm.
And the studio overruled him on that. But, you know, when you think about it, that title could constitute a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
But the question then becomes, how does Michael Corleone die?
Right.
And that's the spoiler.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, again, not a great comparison, but here it's like, well, we know Doctor Strange is going to come back, but how is it going to happen? That's the question mark.
I've got to say, I'm kind of impressed that the, as you were touting the lessons of the DVD commentaries from Godfather, they have come into play moments later.
Well, it's funny because I was watching the tail end of Godfather 3 just the other day, and you've seen Godfather 3, right? We've talked about
yes.
it. And, you know, I think, like, if you watch that movie knowing that the original title was The Death of Michael Corleone, then the moment near the end when the thing happens with his daughter,
mm-hmm.
you're watching it with that title in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens to his daughter is a total twist.
Right.
So it's almost more effective. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
You know, so, you know, again.
Way to go, Paramount.
What's that?
It's a way to go, Paramount. It's,
and that's, you know, Coppola talks about that in the commentary, how, like, his stock was so diminished by the time he did Godfather 3 that he had no pull. He couldn't force his will. Whereas when it was time to do the second one, he wanted to call it Godfather Part 2, and the studio was like, you're not calling it that. Because this is true. I didn't realize this, but Godfather 2 is the first time in history a movie was called Part 2.
Really?
Isn't that crazy?
That's kind of fascinating. So what did they want to call it?
Like? They wanted, like, The Godfather Returns or Son of the Godfather or something like that.
Oh. Huh. That's kind of interesting. I wonder then why he felt that way, part two.
Because Coppola felt that the first movie and the second movie were literally two parts of one big story.
Hmm.
And the reason he wanted to call the third one The Death of Michael Corleone is because he felt like movie one and movie two are the story, and movie three is the epilogue.
This is really fascinating. I got to say, guys, go get a movie pass and go out and buy Godfather Trilogy on Blu-ray at Amazon.com. Or your local, you know, place still sells those things.
Yeah, I mean it's funny because my brother, I've been on his case for literally 15-16 years. Watch the Godfather movies. He's finally doing it, and he'll be like texting me like, oh, I can't, like, you know, Sonny did this, and oh, Fredo did, you know, and he's like watching it for the first time, and it's fun for me because I'm experiencing it for the first time vicariously through him, you know.
Yeah. And it's, oh, that's cool.
Those movies are great. So. This is turning into like the Godfather episode. I apologize. But yeah, so anyway, that just tying back in a very, you know, twisty, turny way back to the Doctor Strange thing.
Yeah.
My point is I'm excited to see a Doctor Strange sequel.
Yeah, same.
I have to say I'm somewhat less excited at the prospect of this movie. And this is that movie that we first heard about last fall. And we were like, please, this will never happen. What, are you kidding me? This is like the Donald Trump presidency of movies. We were like, please. Come on. This is a joke. It'll never actually happen. And then looks like this is happening. This is the Joker origin movie.
Yeah.
Directed by Todd Phillips, which will star Joaquin Phoenix. And it is going to go in front of cameras in September.
And is it still being produced by Martin Scorsese?
You know, I don't see his name listed, so... No, it says Martin Scorsese is no longer producing this version of the Joker, as his dance card is full.
Okay.
Scorsese's producer, Emma Tillinger-Koskoff, is still aboard, however.
Interesting.
Which is weird to me, because I feel like Scorsese's name was what got people talking about this to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to admit I'm a little curious what a Todd Phillips Joker movie is going to look like.
I mean, I got to be honest. I said this on Twitter earlier today. My interest in any Joker origin movie is like less than zero.
Oh, yes. I mean, look, like, I'm not I don't think this is a good idea. And it also makes Warner Brothers look very confused.
Yeah, because this is not part of the shared universe.
I mean, what? You know what I mean? Like, you really want to lose people?
Right.
You know, so apparently Jared Leto is still the Joker in their main series of films, but they're going to have an offshoot of films or someone else's. I get it, but it's just muddy.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
Yeah. So I wonder why this feels so important to them.
Yeah, I mean, without Scorsese, like, I feel like you have Scorsese's name and suddenly Martin Scorsese presents the Joker. That's intriguing.
Yes.
I feel like the guy who directed The Hangover presenting the Joker is less, I mean, I'm not trying to denigrate Todd Phillips, but it's
yeah,
just.
Yeah, no, I get it.
You know, but I think, you know, here's what I said again. I said this on Twitter. I'm like, well, it's happening anyway. So given that, I'd rather we get something that's good.
Ditto. But I mean, we also don't even know much what's happening with the Batman movie over there, which is weird.
Yes.
Like, I mean, right? Is this going to line up with that? And that's even more confusing because apparently Ben Affleck isn't going to be the Batman anymore, but we're still going to get Wonder Woman movies from the same timeline where Ben Affleck is the Batman. Blah, 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 blah. You know?
Yeah, what I read is that Matt Reeves wants to go younger.
Sure.
I when it comes to Batman, I again, this is something I tweeted and I took some grief for this, where I'm just like, barring Ben Affleck being in the role, I'm just fine with us not getting another Batman movie for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like, I mean, think about this, right? In our lifetimes, we've had 9 movies starring Batman, live action movies.
Wow.
And I'm like fine with that. You know what I mean? I'm fine with like, let's maybe let the character rest for like 10 years. That's totally like, you know what I mean? Like, because this isn't a sequel. This will be yet another reboot.
Yes.
And I'm kind of tired of that at this point.
I just feel, we've talked about this, but each series as well, so the Burton ones, the Nolan ones, I mean, well, even the Schumacher, like, they had a voice.
Yeah.
And I feel like they are struggling to find the voice for right now for Batman.
Yes.
Right? And it, like, the it seems the current Batman is just dark. You know, but without anything unique or interesting to say.
Good point.
So I say if they figure it out next year, great. But if it takes another 5, 6, 7, 8 years to figure out what the voice is that's going to resonate and be worth sharing, then great. Like, I'd rather just wait till you have something to say.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's entirely fair. Yeah. The movie's happening and if they're diving so fully into this, then they must, you know, this is what Enrique Rey said on Twitter to me. He said they must have something special to go to all this trouble.
Which, the Joker?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
But it is happening.
Yep.
Which surprises the hell out of me. Another movie that is happening, although it's now been delayed slightly, is Indiana Jones 5.
Where to begin?
Yes, I'm kind of like, guys, you're on the clock with this thing. Because this thing was originally supposed to open July 2020. It's now being pushed to 2021. It is being written by Jonathan Kasdan. Now, that's interesting because he's obviously the son of Lawrence Kasdan, a.k.a. Raiders Lost Ark Lawrence Kasdan. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Solo, which we both agree was good fun. That was very Indiana Jones-esque, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that came to our minds even.
Yeah.
Before this was he was attached to that. Yeah.
But again, I here's my thing. It's very simple. Do I need an Indiana Jones movie this badly? I do not.
I agree. And I love Indiana Jones. We both do. I mean, he's an important character in our sort of movie loving lives, right? And actually on Independence Day, they had an Indiana Jones marathon, And we had friends over, and it was running in the background all day. And everything we did, we kept stopping and watching the movies all day. And I just, I mean, I don't even need to, like, fall in love with them. I already am. But I just fell in love with them again. They're just so good. And it's a bummer that 4 wasn't great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, why risk tripping over yourself again?
And again, you know? Harrison Ford is 75 now, so he will potentially be, you know, 77, 78 by the time this thing comes out.
Yeah, I think somewhere I read, they said it will be 70, I think he'll be 79, is where I read that Variety or something, like 79 years old when it hits theaters.
Jeez.
And which is funny because the picture they showed was from Crystal Skull, and Ford was, you know, elderly, let's put in this picture, but I was like, he looks good. He looks good with the hat on, the whatever.
Yeah.
But when you really think about it, I was like, I started doing some math, and I was like, how old was Jimmy Stewart when we were, you know, like the early 90s or whatever. So, I mean, can you imagine, like, adventure has a name, Jimmy Stewart. You know, I'm like, when he was, like, old man Jimmy Stewart. I mean, that's literally what this is. Or, like, I even looked up, remember Hume, what's his name, Hume Cronin?
Yeah.
You know, who's in Cocoon and all those things. I looked up, like, he was younger in Cocoon.
Wow.
Than Harrison Ford will be playing an action hero.
Wow.
And so I can't unsee Harrison Ford. He's good. You know, I mean, he's my childhood hero and whatnot. So he's always going to look like Harrison Ford to me. But I'm trying to imagine like an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old when I saw probably my first Indiana Jones movie, seeing this poster with almost an 80-year-old,
yeah,
and being like, "You ready for some action, son?"
Right.
You know, like, I don't know. I mean, and I don't even mean it critically, just more as like a curiosity.
Well,
you know?
And I mean, just in being pragmatic, I don't want Harrison Ford to get himself killed making this movie.
Yeah. Well, he will inevitably have to be partnered up with someone.
Well, clearly.
And that runs its risks, right?
I mean, which will almost be like more hilarious, like if the stunt double is very obvious, you know?
Right. I didn't even think about that. The stuntman is going to have to act like he's like double his age.
That'll feel like something out of The Simpsons.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I really don't want to make it sound like we're picking on someone for their age, but it's just sort of, I mean, you do have to be like, is this really worth it?
Well, know, like, yeah, and I mean, I think I may have said this on the show before, but I mean, Harrison Ford is like roughly my dad's age.
Right.
And I'm like, my dad is pretty fit for his age, but I don't want him swinging from vines and shit, you know?
Sorry, I just had your dad.
I'm yeah. Like, you know what yeah. I mean?
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. Look, I mean, there's part of me, though, that very much wants to watch this, because I'm like, well, I mean, if it's not that far away that they actually have it on the, I mean, this could always go away, but clearly they have something in mind.
Yes.
So there's part of me is like, what is it? I mean, yeah, of course I want to know what it is. I just don't want it to suck, you know?
That's a good point.
Yeah. And I just, it would be cool. I mean, this happened before, right? Where they made Raiders of the Lost Ark, then they made Temple of Doom, and Temple of Doom, you know, upset a lot of people, and it was very dark and sort of a departure from Raiders in a lot of ways. And so Spielberg, he is like, been vocal about sort of apologizing for that movie. And he made Last Crusade, which is an obvious response to that movie where it's so lighthearted and, you know, different and even just brighter aesthetically. So, I mean, I wonder if he's feeling this itch, right? Where mm-hmm. he made this conclusion, possible conclusion, and it did not sit well. And now he's like, oh, crap. You know, and so he's got to end it right.
Well,
which
and
I
not,
understand.
Not just that. What is Disney's intention beyond this movie?
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm sure Disney isn't thinking about Indiana Jones as, okay, we're putting a cap on the bottle now, you know?
Oh, yeah, not with the money they paid.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. So like, what, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I'll tell you something. This is a thought that I had watching Ant-Man, is we're at a point now where potentially we could use digital technology to do a age, you know, in his 30s, 40s Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean like as a whole film?
Potentially.
I wonder how well, isn't that sort of what Martin Scorsese is doing with his Netflix movie?
Yeah.
Like de-aging De Niro and yeah. Pesci and all that?
I mean, I think we're there, man. I mean, if you look at what they did in Ant-Man 2.
Oh, yeah. It looks really good. I just wonder how much that costs.
I mean, it's not going to be cheap, but I mean, I don't know. You know, it's like I was. Let me put it this way: I was looking at the budget of Jurassic World 2, and it was like $170 million, which is cheap.
Yeah. For a movie, well, all those visual effects, yeah.
You know, so potentially, if you keep the overall costs down, I mean, I think it's doable. I mean, you know, in this Captain Marvel movie that they're doing, Sam Jackson's going to be de-aged to like early 90s Sam Jackson for the whole movie.
Man, I know they could do it, but I don't know.
I feel like, again, just based on what we've seen in Ant-Man 2, like we've crossed the uncanny valley.
No, I agree. But, you know, it's kind of weird, too. I mean, you got to think about their movement, you know. I mean, is a different person playing their body?
Yes, because in... Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to find somebody. You're going to have to merge the real and the digital.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Ant-Man 2, I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but you have Lawrence Fishburne's son played the young Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, really?
And then they digitally mapped the elder Lawrence Fishburne's face onto him.
Oh, that's funny.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So, anyway. We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah.
Here's another hero. So, yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Is there any part of you that's looking forward to this? That's all I want to know.
You know what, Brian? I'm like you, where I know that once I hear the strains of that music, I can't be objective, you know?
I know.
It's like the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like the sirens, you know, in the Odyssey. I know it.
Yeah.
So.
Agreed.
You know, it's like, do I need another Indiana Jones movie? I absolutely do not. Will I watch another Indiana Jones movie? I absolutely will.
Yep.
So there we go, you know?
All right.
So here's another old-time hero that might be coming back, Brian, and I have a feeling this is of interest only to me and not to you, but there is the possibility, Brian, that Captain Jean-Luc Picard might be returning.
I saw this headline. So what is this? Like a TV series?
Well, I guess what happened is that Alex Kurtzman, who is the he developed, you know, Star Trek Discovery, which is the series that's currently on CBS All Access, and he's currently the showrunner of that show. So he signed a new contract, sort of upping his duties on that show and incorporating other potential Star Trek projects. And so one potential Star Trek project that's been rumored is a CBS All Access miniseries that would bring back Patrick Stewart as Captain Picard.
So I am not super versed with that side of Star Trek.
Yes.
And so where they left him off, I mean, is he in some sort of precarious spot, or did he ride off in the sunset, or where is he at currently?
So the last time we saw Captain Picard was in 2002, the movie Star Trek Nemesis, which is like one of the biggest flops in Star Trek history. It was the Solo of its day, if you will. They opened that movie like 3 days before The Two Towers.
Oh, okay.
And it just got, I mean, it was roadkill, you know. And unfortunately, that ended up being sort of the last hurrah for the Next Generation cast. But where it ended, it was just kind of like another adventure. It wasn't an ending per se.
Mm-hmm.
So there is certainly room to bring him back. And, you know, Patrick Stewart is, I mean, he's about the same age as Harrison Ford, actually. And I certainly buy him coming back as his character more than Harrison Ford coming back as Indy, you know?
Yeah.
Because what does Captain Picard do? He sits in chairs mostly and tells right. people what to do. And he's still commanding. And I mean, again, Patrick Stewart's like 77. So him and Harrison Ford are like a year apart.
Huh.
But it's just funny how the you know, losing the genetic lottery in terms of your hair
right.
has the what one could argue the positive effect of just sort of making you appear timeless.
Right. that's funny.
Right? Because Patrick Stewart, yeah. like we were first, most of us were first introduced to him in the late 80s when he was like in his mid-40s.
Hmm.
Right? And you look at Patrick Stewart from then to now and you're like, eh. It's kind of the same.
That's how I remember.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so for me, unlike, say, bringing back William Shatner as Captain Kirk, I think the window on that is closed. This, I'm like,
I would totally be down for this. I think there's something potentially interesting here.
Sure, cool.
As like a finite thing, as like a mini series. And we're in this age where they're bringing everything back. They're bringing back friggin' Murphy Brown. Right? I think the idea of like a 10-episode last hurrah for the Next Generation cast, I think that would be really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this doing it through this online thing, I think that's a perfect way to do it because, you know, CBS All Access, they said that they used Star Trek Discovery as a carrot, if you will, to get subscriptions. Well, shit, if that didn't get you to subscribe and you're like a Trekkie, this is definitely going to get you to subscribe.
For sure.
Right? I mean, we talk about people signing up for YouTube Red because of Cobra Kai.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like the Cobra Kai for Trekkies.
Totally.
Right? You know, so there's potential there. Now, other Star Trek news. I feel like we should have like Star Trek music playing. This is like the Star Trek section. The fourth Star Trek movie is chugging light right along. They actually have two Star Trek movies in development to feature potentially the Kelvin crew, you know, the mm-hmm. I would say your crew, Brian.
Yeah, this is, yeah. I don't know. You know?
this is the Star Trek crew that you sort of came in with.
Yeah. And when these were popular, that's when you sort of schooled me on the older films.
I used it as a venue to Shanghai you in to the history. But you know, the third one that came out 2 years ago only did okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some questions.
Which we liked.
We liked it. We got to see it together, in fact.
Yeah.
However, that you know, there was talk of Quentin Tarantino developing a story idea for a third movie, which I guess now, a fourth movie, which will now, I guess, be a fifth movie if he ends up doing it. Because he's doing that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood right now, right, Tarantino?
Right.
Which has, like, everybody in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
right? That's like the huge. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back of Tarantino movies, which is a weird way to describe that, I guess.
I was going to say it's so random, but yeah, I totally understand what you're saying.
we didn't talk about this. They are doing a fourth movie that is going to be directed by S.J. Clarkson. I think that's her name.
Okay.
And I've never heard of her, but she is a director of mostly television. She's worked with Zachary Quinto before, and she would be the first woman to ever direct a Star Trek movie, so kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Well, is that the whole time-jumping thing?
Apparently. So that's the Chris Hemsworth comes back idea.
Right.
And then while that's, you know, coming out, Tarantino will finish up his Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then if all things work out, he would direct this fifth Star Trek movie based on his idea.
Hey, that sounds good.
I mean, I think it's interesting that Paramount feels, you know, like they can boldly go, no pun intended, into two more movies, considering the last one didn't really perform the way they wanted. So I'm curious about the thinking behind that.
I don't know. I mean, they must. I wonder if the Tarantino thing is really just this idea where they're like, well, it ain't ready, so we got to do something to keep this engine running, and that's cool. But I mean, they must either they really think the idea is spectacular, or they just kind of want to be in business with Tarantino.
Yeah, I mean, I find interesting is that Tarantino, of all people, has been very franchise averse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, since he broke through, you know, I mean, he's had plenty of opportunities, you know?
Yeah.
He could have done his whatever superhero movie he wanted, and he hasn't. So, like, why Star Trek? That's kind of interesting. Like, what is it about Star Trek? I didn't even know Tarantino was a Star Trek fan.
It doesn't surprise me, though. Hmm. You know, I mean, he seems to have this real affinity for sort of late 60s, early 70s pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, I'm assuming when he was young, so... I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's like, this is a show I watched, you know, every whatever when I was a kid, and I had this idea, and it seems like, I don't know, it fits for me.
Yeah. I'm just a fan of this crew.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
And so, you know, if we could get like six movies out of them and match the, you know, the original crew, their movies, that would be awesome. I think it would be a shame. I think they've got a really good thing going now, and I would hate for them to just be like, okay, well, people didn't watch the last one, so let's shut it down, boys, you know.
right,
as
right,
tends right. to be like the franchise thing. I like that they're like, you know what? Let's work with what we have and figure out a way to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they used to do it when we were kids, Brian.
Yeah. You know, didn't always hit, and you try again, and a lot of times it did.
Sometimes, you know, it's when I was a kid, I had a friend who used to play Atari, and whenever he was playing a game, if he lost even one life, he would reset the game.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what was happening with our movie franchises these days.
Oh, all those kids grew up and they're running studios now.
That's right. So I'm excited, man. Potentially Captain Picard is coming back. Potentially the current Star Trek movie crew is coming back. So if you're a Trekkie like me, this is all good news. On the other hand, if you're Brian, none of the last 10 minutes means anything.
I'm more just like, that sounds fun.
Like, I'm glad Zach is happy. That's all. Why don't we take another break, and then we'll talk about that other franchise with the word star in the title. And we're back, and I hear some music playing, Brian.
I love that song.
It's a little Pied Piper thing, just like the Indiana Jones music. I've come to love the version of the Imperial March that we play on this show.
Yeah, me too.
Because that means I can just take a step back and just listen to you tell me about the latest Star Wars news.
Well, something that came up a couple weeks ago that we had not touched on yet, and I couldn't believe it, is that we've said, you know, Lucas has sold off Lucasfilm. Someone else is going to be making these Star Wars stories. But Lucas, ever since the early 80s, has been saying Star Wars is going to be 9 movies. And he ended up making 6 of them, so it leads us to wonder, well, he must have had something in mind for 7, 8, 9, right? And we even know, actually, with the sale, that Lucas did share his ideas, and under, you know, the new Lucasfilm decided, no, we're not going to do it. So I wondered, in this day and age, at some point we have to find out. And even Mark Hamill had even alluded, yeah, oh yeah, you know, this has been shared with me. And so it turns out, I guess this was through James Cameron's Story of Science Fiction series,
right? Which I've told you about that. That's a great show.
Yeah. I keep forgetting about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I guess he was interviewing George Lucas as a part of that show.
It's
and
for
Lucas,
the show, but it's in the book, the companion book.
Wait, there's a companion book to James Cameron's Story of Science Fiction show?
That's correct.
Wow. Okay. So, fortunately, you guys are in for a treat here. We actually have George Lucas here to tell us the quotes from this book.
George, are you here? I'm here, guys.
Hey, that's fantastic. Hey, so could you tell us what the next 3 Star Wars films were going to be had you made them?
Well, I was very excited about this. And I got to say, I'm a little disappointed that, they went another way.
Yeah.
My idea was the next 3 Star Wars films were going to get into a microbiotic world.
Now, you've lost me already, George. What do you mean?
There's this world of creatures that operate different than we do. I call them the Wills. And the Wills are the ones who actually control the universe. They feed off the Force.
Okay.
Now, back in the day, I used to say ultimately what this means is that we were just cars. Vehicles for the Wills to travel around in. We're vessels for them, and the conduit is the midichlorians. The midichlorians are the ones that communicate with the Wills. The Wills, in a general sense, they are the Force.
Okay. I am literally stupefied by that, and I can't even play along anymore.
but Brian, wait, there's more.
Oh,
all
okay.
The way back to, with the Force and the Jedi and everything, the whole concept of how things happen was laid out completely from the beginning to the end, but I never got to finish. I never got to tell people about it. If I held on to the company, I could have done it, and then it would have been done. Of course, a lot of the fans would have hated it, just like they did Phantom Menace and everything, but at least the whole story from beginning to end would be told. And I could finally die.
That's so dark, but that would be kind of funny if that's how he actually ended it.
Now, here's the thing, okay? What I love about this idea is it's such a batshit George Lucas idea. And here's why I love it. Because, mm-hmm. I'll tell you why. Because for the past, like, 6 months, we've gotten nothing but whiny man babies who are like, Rian Johnson ruined Star Wars. Kathleen Kennedy ruined Star Wars. George Lucas should have gotten a chance to finish his thing. And I almost feel like everything that just came out here is him daring them now to still be on his side.
I would love that then if they're like, and in fact, we got George, and he's going to tell us what we're all missing out on.
My idea is we go back in time to when Anakin is 10 years old. And he and Jar Jar go on a mystic journey into the history of the midichlorians. It's like all this stuff people hate.
Yeah.
One movie.
I think that sounds insane.
this is my point. Like, George Lucas knows how people feel about this stuff. So the fact that his idea, I almost think he made this up just to piss people off. The history of the midichlorians.
Which is interesting because, all right, now I'm going to put on my Star Wars nerd glasses. But, like, Star Wars began as being called the Journal of Wills.
Yes.
Right? So this has been in his brain forever. Hey, look, something.
Brian, I've said this to you from the beginning. He's talked about how the midichlorians were there from the jump. And in the earliest documents, he describes them. And when you read it and when you hear him talk about it, you're like, I completely get that.
Yeah.
So the idea that it's all part of his initial idea, I believe it.
I believe it too. But I don't understand what that even means. Like, there's some sort of like overlords that are actually the Force that are controlling people through midichlorians and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know.
Sounds pretty awesome, huh?
Look, man. Same with Indiana Jones 5. If you wrote it down, I'm willing to read it.
Here's the thing.
However,
here's what I've realized about George Lucas and Star Wars. What the stuff I tend to love is George Lucas's ideas filtered through, of some other vessel.
That is true, and obviously that is I'm sure referencing Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi,
and a lot of people are even like, Star Wars, Brian. I mean,
that was going to be my point, because a lot of people are like, well, the only one he wrote and directed solely was Star Wars, but I mean, we keep learning to this day about more and more of the contributions that a lot of people had, including his wife, made a major contribution in making that movie the movie we love.
Yes.
It's almost criminal how unsung she is, actually.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it before, about how the third act of Star Wars, the attack on the Death Star, how the idea of the Death Star encroaching on the rebel base was added in post.
Yes.
It's amazing. Yes.
The ticking clock. I can't even imagine it without it.
Yeah, exactly. So this idea, it's weird, because I mean, obviously we're kind of like poking fun at George Lucas. On one level, I would have loved to see him finish what he saw in his mind.
Me too, because I mean, clearly he's not telling us the story. I mean, there would be a new person and a this and a Luke and a what, you know, I mean, like, there'd be something here for us to like act, that doesn't sound as abstract as what we're reading right here, and I'm a little curious how all this would apply to it
but I mean, look, the reality is, I mean, seriously, the last 6 months or so have been a real eye-opener for me to the extent of terribleness of Star Wars fans.
Yes.
This is something we've always known. I mean, Brian, I sent you a letter from like Cinefantastique from like 94.
Yeah.
Or sorry, 95, where somebody is responding to Lucas pushing back the prequel trilogy. Because, you know, the original plan was for it to come out in like 97, and then he ended up pushing it to 99. And this fan is like, you know, if he's not ready, then step aside. Let somebody else do it. He owes it to us. And he's like, it's been 10 years since the last movie and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, shut the hell up. Who the hell are you? You know?
Yeah.
So fan entitlement.
Yeah. It's always been there.
It's always been there. And when you look at just how horrible fans have been with every aspect of this,
it's not like George Lucas would be a magic bullet, because if he had not made the sale, if he's like, you know, I'm going to make my sequel movies, people would be wiping their ass with him left, right, and center.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he even gave that quote, remember? Like, why would I make more when people just tell you how terrible you are? Like, tell you what a terrible person you are.
Yeah, I mean, it like, broke him.
Right.
Yeah, and it's really sad because he brought us the thing that we love.
The fact that you've had people going up to George Lucas and being like, with all due respect, you ruined the original movies or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, who the hell are you, you know?
Yeah.
And so what we're seeing right now play out via, you know, Rian Johnson and on Twitter and everything else, it's just amplifying the terribleness that was already there.
Yes.
So, I mean, again, we're kind of poking fun and having some fun at George Lucas' expense, but you know, there's no upside if he decided to make his sequel trilogy, there would be no upside for him.
Yeah, for his own personal health. Actually, when you were reading in his voice, the part where you said, "Of course, a lot of fans would have hated it, just like they did the Phantom Menace and everything," I was like, oh.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Poor guy.
It's really, what else can you say but poor guy? I mean, except he is, in fact, literally the exact opposite of a poor guy.
I mean, yes, and that's a lot of times, you know, when you say that about someone, like, yeah, but they're rich. And I'm like, yeah, but they're also a human being.
You know? Yeah, but $4 billion is you know, I'm happy to drown my sorrows in $4 billion.
I mean, yeah,
Like you can shit on me forever if I have $4 billion. You from now until the end of creation, every day you can talk about what a bad person I am.
You'd be like, that's great, as you're swimming in your Scrooge McDuck pool.
I will not care even a little bit.
Yeah.
Other Star Wars news, Brian.
Well, onwards and upwards, we have Episode 9 coming up in a couple years, or... Wait, no.
And it will not be about the Wills and the midichlorians.
No, but we are going to have a link to the past, because it was officially announced that Billy Dee Williams will be reprising Lando in Episode 9.
And it's about damn time.
I mean, well, it's come up with every new film, right? So...
Now here's what's going to happen is he's going to walk on and he'll be like, "Hey, how's everybody?"
I mean, that's kind of what everyone's assuming.
He's
going
to spontaneously explode. Like, it's not like the ship he's on. Like, he'll just be a pile of ash.
Right. Well, you know, and that's the thing, too. I mean, that's sort of been the tradition, right? Trot out the person you love and then kill him. you got to wonder if they are feeling pressured to subvert that. Because otherwise it's just going to feel expected.
Have Kylo Ren stab him again. I picture, remember that SNL skit with Shia LaBeouf, and it's like that Imoen Heap song? What you say?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, yeah.
I picture something like that. No, I'm glad Billy Dee Williams is coming back. I'm glad they're getting him in. I'm glad for Billy Dee Williams, because I really do feel like he's probably been sitting by the phone for like 6 years at this point.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can have the cynical view on it, and I can appreciate that, and I probably have a percentage of it, but at the same time, like, oh, man, I hope they got a good idea for him, you know? Like, that'd be cool.
I think that... See, I'll tell you, I mean, honestly, what bums me out even more now is, like, you know, I mean, again, the decision to kill off Han Solo so early in the trilogy, it bums me out. Because I mean, again, just to be very clear, I'm mostly on board with what they're doing. But again, that does stick in my craw a little that we didn't get any of these characters reuniting. You know?
Yeah, that's, and we never will.
We never will. I mean, the closest we got is the scene with Luke and Leia at the end of Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just weird to me. I mean, that's one of those, like, that's like a jump ball.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, how do you, did no one think about that? Is it, you know, it's such an obvious thing to include, is even one scene where these characters are all together.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'd be, you know, I was really curious about that. I was actually thinking about this the other day. Now, I don't mean to turn this into talking Star Wars here, but.
Well, it is our Star Wars segment, so.
Well, it is, but I mean, I'm going to go down a path for a second. But with a lot of people had problems with Luke in Last Jedi, and this actually doesn't have to do with that, but with him being this, you know, curmudgeon on an island, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, JJ put him there.
Yeah.
And I wonder what he was thinking. Mm-hmm. And this goes to how, you know, you could argue that these films are a little disjointed because there wasn't one overarching author looking over it. Hmm. Sort of like we had George Lucas for the first three. And so I wonder, I'm kind of wondering what JJ, what he was imagining was to come in the next film, regardless if he had anything to do with it. And then it's interesting that he's coming back now to wrap it all up.
Well, you know, he said this to Mark Hamill, right? That at the end of Force Awakens, his idea was like, we're going to add like rocks levitating around you and stuff just to show how powerful yes. you are. And so Mark Hamill had that idea in his head.
Right.
And they ended up not doing that, I'm guessing, because by the time they filmed it or by the time they did post on it, you know, they already knew what Rian Johnson was going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And Rian Johnson's whole thing was like, Luke is cut off from the Force, right?
Right.
So the question then becomes, yeah, why did J.J. Abrams put him there? And I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, it gets to, I mean, we've talked about this before. I think one of the debits for this trilogy to some extent is that it's like a whose line is it anyway mm-hmm. game mm-hmm. where it's like you have to pick up from where we left off, figure it out. And
yeah,
I mean,
but I guess my thinking that got me there was that it was, even when it was kicked off, it was designed so we would never see Luke and Han together.
Yeah, well, and this is something that, that what's his name? Who is the guy? Michael Arndt, right, who was initially yes. writing it. He was talking about how the reason they did that was that the sooner, the earlier in the story Luke came in, he became the center of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And how you couldn't, like, if you wanted to focus on the new characters, then you couldn't do that.
Makes sense.
If the story is about the search for Luke, then if we meet him at the halfway point, then now it's the Luke story,
right?
Which I get, I guess.
Yeah.
Right, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because would you say that when Han because Han comes in at about the half hour mark, he doesn't really become the focus of the story though.
No, I actually thought, you know, he plays quite nicely with Rey, you know, as this sort of mentor, and I'm never, I don't know, yeah, it feels balanced.
It right. So that's, I mean, I think they're right. I think the calculation there was right, that if you want it to be about the new characters, then you bring in Luke at that point, then it's just, it's the Luke story.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of like, well, I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm not going to say I'm a better writer than Michael Arndt. So if that was a problem he found insurmountable, I'll believe that was an insurmountable problem.
Mm-hmm. But I do wonder, I mean, obviously JJ had a different idea of what Luke was going to be like. So I'm a little curious
yes.
what he was headed toward.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right? I think the problem then, because Rian Johnson was looking at it like, if Luke is this powerful, why would he, you know, why would he turn his back on the universe?
Totally, which is a valid question.
Right, and so his solution was, well, he's cut himself off from the Force. That makes sense to me
mm-hmm.
as, okay, this is where we're at. And because that's what he said, that's what Rian Johnson said. He approached it as, okay, how did we end up here?
Mm-hmm.
And he reverse engineered it from there. So, I mean, to some extent, I put the blame on Mr. Mystery Box.
Right? Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know. I'm these are the things Brian thinks about when he's shampooing his hair. So it's kind of fun that I can actually talk this out with you.
Well, that's why we have this segment on the show.
Yeah.
I think it's true. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's... I get it. It reminds me of, I want to say this was Lucas talking about when they were developing Indiana Jones 4 and how originally they had planned for Sean Connery to have a cameo in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the problem was that, like, it would have been like near the beginning of the film that Indy goes and meets his dad and they have a little scene and then Indy goes off on his venture. But the problem is we're like, oh, like, why isn't dad coming?
Mm, sure, sure.
And so in a way it was for the best that Sean Connery opted out.
You know what's funny, by the way?
Yeah.
So we've talked about Harrison Ford being 79
yeah.
in the next Indiana Jones movie. You know how old Sean Connery was when he played his dad?
Wasn't he like 50-something? He's like 54?
Yeah, I think he's 59.
He was 59 in that movie?
Yeah.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Just fun bar trivia.
Well, that's like this thing I saw the other day, that John Travolta was 39 when he did his comeback role in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, crazy.
And I'm like, okay, 39. So I've got like 3 months to do my Welcome Back, Kotter, Boy in the Plastic Bubble, Staying Alive,
right.
Saturday Night Fever before that, Grease, and Look Who's Talking 1, 2, and 3. So I got to get all those out of the way in the next few months before I can do my comeback movie.
Yeah, and then make your phenomenon.
Yeah, and then right back to obscurity. Isn't he in like the worst reviewed movie of the year right now, this Gotti movie?
Gotti. You know who distributed that?
MoviePass. So you funded that single-handedly. That's what that means.
Actually, there's a... Oh, man, we're like totally going long. But there's... Real quick, there's a fun conspiracy. I think this is worth bringing up. Have you heard this? So Gotti comes out, and the whole argument that they're trying to make is like, look, critics hate it. Yeah, that's fine, whatever. But users love it. So on Rotten Tomatoes, the user rating is very high. So that I wasn't planning on talking about this. I don't know who did this. Some critic or someone did the research, and they dug into all the people who gave it a positive review on Rotten Tomatoes. And what they found was it was too many people for what the box office was.
Wow.
And so they're like, well, who are these people? Let me go back in time here a little bit. MoviePass wants to get into film distribution on top of having this annual subscription service. And they have only distributed two films so far, one called American Animals, which is supposedly pretty good, and Gotti. So as this guy did his digging and he found these users and who gave Gotti a positive rating, he noticed that the majority of them had only signed up recently and have reviewed one movie, Gotti.
That's hilarious.
And the others had reviewed only two movies, Gotti and American Animals.
Wow.
Is that crazy?
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's food for thought, Brian.
That's the gasoline as I dance.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave this discussion. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this is part one of our movie film output for this week, because we're going to come back and do a full-on episode talking about Ant-Man.
Yeah. So
this was sort of our long and coming catch-up episode.
Yep.
So what do you think? Should we do like a regular wrap-up?
Sure, why not?
All right, well, this has been episode 151, and if you do have any feedback or comments about this episode or any other episode, you can email us moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit like on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast. Also, please go to iTunes and leave a review, leave a star rating. Every little bit helps. If you're looking for me online, you can find me at zakiscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. This is the blog, by the way, that somebody was going after me online, and they said, P.S., his blog sucks.
Really?
Yeah. But here's the funny thing, actually, because they were going after, they were like, he's a toxic person. They compared me to Ted Bundy. This is true. He's a toxic person. He's like Ted Bundy. P.S. his blog sucks.
I feel like they had their statement ending.
That right.
And they completely blew it.
I was like, shouldn't you end with the Ted Bundy thing? That feels like the more powerful ender. But anyway.
Yeah.
If you want to see the blog that sucks,
I was gonna say that should be the quote, like the banner quote.
I totally agree with you. I want to create a new banner that just says that. But that is Zakis Corner. That's also my Twitter. That's also my Instagram. So you can find me there. And you know, there's some good stuff happening there. And Brian, how about you?
Yeah, I write for a show called Puppy Dog Pals, which is on Disney and Disney Junior, and just watch it.
It's a good one. It's a good show. And like I said, we will be back tomorrow with episode 151B, let's call it.
Yeah.
Talking through Ant-Man. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back.
Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Boom Podcast. Okay.